The following program is a production of the Recording Library of West Texas and is also available at recordinglibrary.org.
Welcome to Eyes on Psych with Lewis Busby, the show where we focus on not only the mental issues of the community, but the solutions as well. From anxiety-relieving techniques that you can practice at home, to services available to you and your loved ones right here in your own community. Now, without further ado, Eyes on Psych with Lewis Busby. Welcome to Eyes on Psych with Lewis Busby. Once again, a new episode, man. You've been busy, Lewis.
I have.
We have a special guest in the studio with us. Now, you know her husband. He's been on the Recording Library of West Texas a few times, Aaron Bedell. Well, this is Elaine Bedell, and it's nice to have you on the show, Elaine.
Oh, thank you. It's nice to be here.
Tell us what you're doing here, who you're with, and kind of introduce yourself a little bit. Let us know what it is you do.
Sure. It's a new initiative for Midland, and it's called the Midland Behavioral Health Initiative, and I'm the executive director for it. It is a nonprofit organization, and we are branched out of Midland Memorial Hospital. So they're kind of my parent, so to speak, and I am an employee of the hospital. And our goal is to facilitate the collaboration within the mental health community of Midland to help elevate services and eliminate any barriers or gaps that people may have. So there are a lot of times that people will not seek treatment for many different reasons. Busby, I know you probably know that all too well.
Definitely.
Is it because you don't have a ride, because you're having other issues, housing issues, legal issues, something like that? And so sometimes it's not just that you don't have insurance or something that seems to be right there with it, but there may be some other factors. So we try to work with different organizations within the community to help facilitate how can we all work together, who do we know that we can kind of join you up with to get those needs met so that you can get on and have your services.
Which makes a lot of sense, actually. I mean, you have somebody who can't get mental health because they don't have a ride there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they don't get mental help. They lose their job. Things like that happen.
Right.
Worse, it snowballs.
Right.
And
exactly.
Causes not only their lives to be worse, but the people around them as well.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're doing is basically saving the community from itself.
Well, we are attempting to assist in that. There's so many different needs, and really, I started October 23rd of last year, not to be specific about it, but no one's counting.
Nobody's counting.
Right. Yeah, so we're not even a year old yet, so a lot of it is me learning what's out there and me learning the community and seeing what is available and learning what the needs are and trying to find those win-win situations. What is it that maybe the transportation system, what can they do to help out? How
right.
can, because again, there's not unlimited resources out there. Everybody is limited by money, time, whatever. And so you can't continue to ask people to do more with less. So you have to figure out how they're going to be able to both win together in accomplishing those goals.
Makes sense. Makes perfect sense. Lewis, now that you know what Elaine does here, can you elaborate on that? You know, people, some of the problems that people have getting mental health. What are some of the things that you've seen?
Definitely time, trying to get rides for sure. Like, for instance, if a patient goes to MHMR and they're a minute late, then they don't see them, so then they don't have their meds for a month or two or three, however long it takes to get them back in. So,
and I would imagine that in itself probably snowballs as well.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
They go in, they don't get their meds because they were a little bit late, then they get discouraged and they don't want to go back.
Right. Absolutely. And then you have, of course, the finances. Our nonprofits like Centers for Children and Families, yes, they have funding for military, but they don't have funding for others, or they charge roughly the same amount any of the outpatient counselors will charge to go.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have a bunch of highly indigent people that are, of course, because of mental health, a lot of reasons. They don't have access to any mental health because no one will provide it because of the expense of it and the lack of a nonprofit that actually covers them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's something that people don't really understand as well is that it's not inexpensive to provide mental health services.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
oh, yeah.
I mean, you have to provide the lights and phones and all that to have a physical facility for people to come into.
Right.
And then you also have to have the office staff and payroll and the physician or the counselors. And then in addition to that, you have to make sure what about your medications and keeping all of that? I mean, it's a very complex system, and so there are very few people who have the ability to take on that kind of a system and navigate it with any kind of success. So the fact that we have places like Centers and Soparenton and Agape, you know, all of these is really an amazing success for our community that we have so many resources. Mm. And now just figuring out how to help everybody be even better is kind of the next phase.
Right.
I think that's absolutely great. And I do want to take a little bit of time to say hi to the people online. I was just turning on my phone. I forgot to look at the comments. I'm sorry. So, hi, Bailey, and hi, John. Thank you guys for tuning in. We appreciate it. And there's a few others tuned in, but they're not commenting. They're just spectating, which is absolutely fine. You don't have to say anything. But let me ask you this. What originally made you want to get into this field? What is it about your background that made you want to, you know, help others, especially when it comes to mental health, things like that?
So originally my background, well, I am from Midland. I was born in Midland Memorial Hospital. I graduated from Midland High. Can't get much more Midland, you know. And
I've got that same story, actually. Oh, and Lewis's phone just went off. That's the challenge we face with doing Facebook Live, is we can't turn off his phone in order to
make it go.
Right. Mm-hmm. But no, I was born in Midland Memorial, graduated from Midland High. So.
And so there you go. And so from there I went on and I did become a pharmacist and went off to residency and all of that. And so during my residency, began to see more and more need, because as a clinical pharmacist, you interact directly with the public on many different issues. And so as you interact, you start seeing issues, you start seeing what's out there. And for me, anytime you get into the healthcare field, you get into serve, you become a servant, that you do want to help people. And so from there, I came back here to Texas, and then I came back to Midland eventually with family, because my whole family is still here, and began working again with, in the trauma unit over at Medical Center Hospital. Again, seeing these patients that continue to have mental health issues or their struggles like that, and behavioral health issues, more broad encompassing definition there. But then you start thinking about, well, what can you do? And one thing led to another. You know how life is, that everything happens for a reason. Became the director of pharmacy for all eight of the Ocean's Behavioral Health Hospitals in the state of Texas. Uh-huh. So again, began to see more and more need, more and more patient issues there. And so as this opportunity presented itself, in order to be able to step in and help kind of tie some of those pieces together, it seemed like a natural fit for me. So I was very blessed to be able to have that opportunity.
Well, I know asking somebody, if I were to ask Lewis the same question, he would probably have a hard time answering it. But for you, in your opinion, what do you think the most important thing to know about people with mental illnesses or mental difficulties, what do you think the most important thing to know about them is?
So I think that's two sides. So if you're somebody who does not have any experience with mental health and it's not something you understand, and then also the other side of if you are somebody who has mental health or is aware of that, from that side, knowing that you're not alone, that there's one in five people, which is like 40-something thousand people in this Midland area that are right there with you. So
I like how you localize that number, because a lot of people like to use national numbers. Mm-hmm. It actually does make them feel better to really know locally how many people are share that affliction with them.
So locally, our population per the Census Bureau is up somewhere about 165,000. So you do one in five of that. So that's about 33,000 people there that have some kind of mental health diagnosis or illness. And so then when you compare that with something that we all know about, we'll talk about another chronic illness, diabetes. Everybody knows somebody with diabetes. Sometimes you don't realize that you have diabetes until you're in crisis, right? So that's when you go into the ER and this kind of stuff. So the CDC says that 1 in 12 people have diabetes. So that would be about 13,500 people in Midland. So when you think about, oh yeah, everybody knows somebody with diabetes and they're totally okay with talking about that, but 33,000 have some kind of mental health issue. Mm. So you can talk about the fact that obviously mental health is something that is under awareness. It's underappreciated, underserved, just under the radar altogether. So that's the other thing, as far as not people who don't have mental illness, something to think about and focus on, is that how prevalent it really is and how people will strive, because nobody wants to be seen as odd or different or anything like that. So many people strive to look normal, look how they're supposed to look from society. So you might never know. And until you are open to accepting that and seeing it, that you just won't. It's just hidden.
I like how you kind of put that in perspective for everybody. You know, you have this many people with diabetes and everybody's okay with it, but you also have this many people with mental issues, and we seem to try to want to keep it secret.
Right.
And Lewis, in your experience, how successful are people who go untreated? How successful are they keeping it from people? You know, you're trying to look normal, but how long can you keep that charade on?
Well, it depends on the diagnosis, of course, and also any kind of trauma or environmental stimuli or factors like that. But I would say a lot of them can keep the charade on for a long time, but it's still causing damage to them.
Right.
And that's the fear right there. And then all of a sudden, you know, it gets much worse, and then we have crisis. That's the problem.
Right. And I like how you said crisis, like you describe, you know, diabetes as you don't really address it until you're in crisis. And people do that with mental health. There's symptoms. Whether you want it to be a sickness or not, it is a sickness, and it will build up, and eventually you will snap. And snap, I don't mean you're going to go crazy or anything. It just means you will have a breakdown.
Point. Yeah, you reach a breaking point where there are, regardless of how many different coping skills you have or how much support you have or how strong you are as a person, that's also a big thing to think about, is that you may be a very strong person, but you are only a person. We all have limits.
And I think it's important to keep in mind that you shouldn't fear hitting your breaking point nearly as much as people seem to, because everybody has that breaking point, and everybody, whether they're, quote, normal or not, will break several times in their life and have moments of weakness. Mm-hmm. And, Lewis, I'm sorry. One thing somebody asked is, do you take children's Medicaid, Lewis?
I'm not. Unfortunately, I do not take Medicaid. I did at first, but I found that because I'm a single office, it was really hard to get paid, and they subsidize it through so many different companies. So I'd spend about 10, 15 hours to get paid for one.
Yep.
It just wasn't very logical.
Right.
Yeah, that's one of those things that people don't realize how difficult insurance companies are.
Mm-hmm.
They really are, and I think anybody can identify with that if you've ever used insurance for anything. They're difficult to deal with, but imagine it on the side of the doctor or the counselor. Imagine how difficult of a time you have dealing with your insurance company. Imagine that amplified, because that's basically what you guys go through.
Mm-hmm. However, for the person that asked that, if you want to, feel free to email me.
It was Stormy, by the way. Stormy Pittman.
Feel free to email me, Stormy, and I'll help you find someone.
Perfect.
Well, that's actually one of the other things that the behavioral health leadership team is working in conjunction with the hospital with, is that we are trying to find something, trying to create something like that, a central access point. So if you have a question of you're concerned about a loved one, you're concerned about yourself, whatever the question may be, that we are going to launch an expansion, or the hospital is going to launch an expansion of 6-8 Nurse program, where it will also include the behavioral health issues, just like any other chronic disease state that somebody might be having in their lives. So you can call 6-8 Nurse, and that is, if you're not familiar with 6-8 Nurse, it's a 24/7, 365 call center. It's staffed by RNs. And you can ask whatever medical question you have, and then they will be able to facilitate getting you to whatever help you may need. So if that is you have an issue with your child and you need to have some kind of services for them and you don't have a payer source, or if you have an elderly parent that is showing signs of dementia or something else, that they'll be able to help you find those resources in our community.
It's funny you should mention 6-8 Nurse, because I've actually called 6-8 Nurse before, and ironically, I have panic attacks every once in a while, and the only reason I know that is because of 6-8 Nurse. I thought I was having a heart attack.
They're very similar.
I called them. I was like, I think I might need to go to the hospital, and they asked me a series of questions, and they told me we're not going to tell you not to go to the hospital.
Right.
But it sounds more like you're having a panic attack than a heart attack based on mm-hmm. the symptoms you're talking about. And sure enough, I went... They suggested some over-the-counter stuff that I could take. I took it. It did calm me down mm-hmm. enough to where I no longer... At least I was still kind of anxious, but I was no longer feeling like I was going to die.
Having a heart attack, yeah, exactly. The impending doom had subsided for the moment.
Yeah, oh my gosh. And the first time it had ever happened... And they can have...
Scary.
They can start up out of nowhere. You can never have one, and then all of a sudden, boom, you're like, oh my gosh, what's going on, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So it's crazy.
And that's why I think it's so important for people to realize that mental health, and I say this a lot, that it's a continuum, and you can be on the where, and it moves every day. So at different points in your life, you have hard things. You may have a divorce, you may have a job change, you may have whatever, those things happen in life, and on that continuum, it's constantly moving is where you are. That's why it's very important to be mindful of your mental health, aware of it, and constantly thinking about it and how to stay in that good zone for your mental health.
Well, and what's odd to me is even now talking about it, you know, I said I have panic attacks, and there was a little bit of hesitation to say that because you feel like there's something to be ashamed of. And it's like you said, it really is just an illness like anything else. You wouldn't be ashamed of saying, well, I have diabetes, you know.
Right.
Nothing like that. We need to get over that stigma when it comes to mental health and understand that it really is a sickness just like anything else.
Agreed. So that is one of the things that the Behavioral Health Leadership Team, we are kicking off our OK to Say campaign. I'll hold this up for those on the video feed. It's the Kevin Hines is going to be here October the 9th. And you can get your tickets on our website, www.midlandbhi.org. And Kevin is going to talk about his story. He attempted suicide off the Golden Gate Bridge. He's one of 19 survivors from that. And during that, we're going to kick off this OK to Say campaign. And the campaign is basically that it is okay to talk about mental health because it's a chronic disease state just like any other disease, illness that is out there. And so that's what we're going to focus on for October the 9th. So I hope that everybody comes out. There are only 350 tickets available. I looked right before I came on, and we have 147 sold. And I say
wow.
Sold. They are free, but you
sold.
Do.
Sold.
they are free, but you do need to reserve them. It's going to be at the community theater, and we obviously only have so many seats.
Right.
And so you do need to reserve those tickets. And so you can go to Eventbrite or our website in order to get those. Definitely look forward to having everybody there.
Well, I think that the fact... How far out is it again?
It's October the 9th.
October the 9th.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing as we're a few weeks before that, and you've already got 147 seats filled,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
That in itself says how many people in this
speaks
community
to me.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and they have that need. They need mm-hmm. they need more education on it.
Mm-hmm.
They themselves are seeking it out.
Right, absolutely.
And I think that speaks volumes for mm-hmm. the need for what you guys do.
I'm going to try to see if there's any way, hopefully, we could maybe get a different room and like Skype it, or I'm not really sure how we could maybe do more if we do hit capacity, you know, before the event. But
Facebook Live.
Hey, there you go. I know, and Kevin is very good at those things, so he might be able to give us some pointers. But again, it does speak to the fact that it is a topic that people are interested in. They want to know more. They want to be involved. They want to seek help. They want to learn for themselves how do I get into recovery? How do I maintain wellness? How do I do that for my friends, family, colleagues, so that they can also be happy and healthy?
And excuse me, our listeners on the radio right now. I'm going to step away from the mic, and I'm going to go over and speak to the people on Facebook Live, just so they can get this information real quick. So I'm going to step away from the mic, because sometimes I have trouble hearing, because the Facebook Live feed is actually further away than the mic. So I just want to make sure they know where they can find this show, should they need the information.
Okay.
Now, guys, really all I wanted to say is I know sometimes on Facebook Live it's a little bit harder to hear. Obviously, this is going through a phone right here. It's not hooked up to the mics. The actual radio show, the podcast and the actual radio show are at the Recording Library. You can go to recordinglibrary.org, and this episode here will
be on the podcast page under Eyes on Psych, and this episode will be available for you to hear Tuesday. So all of these things, I'll put this up for you again. All the information you need about this will be available then if you need to listen to the podcast and hear, you know, some of the stories that we're talking about and hear a little bit more about the organization. You can listen to it there, just in case you're having trouble hearing there on the Facebook Live.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Oh, yes. Sorry about that, guys.
No, thank you.
Some people can hear and some people can't.
Yes, there you go. And so I think that, again, like you were saying, that obviously when you have that quick of a sell for things, that, you know, it's obviously an interest point. And so we want to make sure that we are providing that kind of education. So hopefully we'll be able to continue to do things like this for the public and have education about mental health issues. One of the things that we're also hoping to bring is I'm now a mental health first aid provider. And that's an 8-hour course. And a lot of people think that's a lot of time. And it is a lot of time. It's a lot of great information. And it's kind of like CPR, that if you get CPR certified, mental health first aid, it does not make you a counselor or a psychiatrist or anything like that. We don't
just grant, like CPR doesn't make you a doctor.
Right, yeah, exactly. And we don't grant capes, we grant certificates. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something we always have to remind people of.
Right.
But what it does do is the mental health first aid is not just for clinicians, it's also for lay people as well. And it's something that gives more information about mental health issues on several different. A lot of times people think just about maybe psychosis or schizophrenia, bipolar. They don't think about anxiety and depression. And anxiety and depression, that's 18% of our population, or 18% of the people that have that issue. And so that's something that we don't really think about that very often.
You know, it's strange that you would say that, because it seems to me like even there's an even higher percentage for that. That seems like a really low number.
Those are reported numbers.
It's a reported number, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So you always have to think about that. And in that number, they did not take into account people who were in jail or in the hospital or, you know, I mean, that was just, as I call, live in the wild.
You mean, you mean people who most likely do suffer from these things?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because as many people know, sadly, the entry point for mental health, a lot of people, is in the judicial system.
Yeah, that's true. Now, you hear the word mental health being thrown around a lot, which I think a lot of that is because people don't realize the difference between mental health and behavior, or mental issues and behavioral issues. Lewis, will you kind of help define those for everybody?
Behavioral can encompass a lot more. You get into problems that are not mental health. ADHD is not mental health, in my opinion. Substance abuse, things like that that are chosen. ADHD is not mental health. It's more of a chemical to me, I think, and so is bipolar. But then you have the other issues that are not mental health, like substance abuse, psychosis caused by substance abuse, things of that nature. But behavioral are things that you can change and you can alter, and it alters it. You can alter the behaviors, and that alters the way that they interact, and the interaction alters the way that they are mentally on it.
Now, is it true that sometimes behavioral things, issues, can actually appear to be mental issues, such as sometimes if you were never properly taught how to behave, or and it's something you just need to work on as a person, you can come off seeming much like a sociopath, when in fact you aren't really a sociopath, you're just very selfish.
Right.
Well, is that kind of the same thing? Am I heading down the right path here? Would you agree with that?
I think that you've opened up a broad topic there, but
there's a lot of ways
you can go with that.
Well, and that's exactly what I'm trying to do, so that you guys can discuss this.
No, I think that behavioral health, specifically for me, it gets more into, as you said, the substance abuse disorders that we talk about, as far as there's also a lot of co-occurring that happens between, and so there's kind of this crosstalk that happens between mental health and then substance abuse disorders, and the umbrella of behavioral health kind of covers them all, because you do kind of, as you talked about there a little bit, that you can have psychosis induced by substance abuse, and so you do have some people who have mental disorders, mental health issues, however you want to encompass that, that they do try to self-medicate. You know, if you're depressed, some people try to drink or do other drugs. And if you have anxiety, you try to, you know, most of the time people start with drinking or, you know, marijuana. Marijuana, exactly. And so
That would help.
Yeah, that's kind of adding another problem into your problem list there. But a lot of times people do that because it's hard to get in to see somebody. You don't want to admit that you have a problem. You don't want anybody to know. So you kind of start trying to self-medicate, self-treat, and fix these things instead of actually just, hey, I have depression, I have anxiety. And so that's how some of that self-medication can start occurring. And then you get into the addiction side of it where you can't give it up
where
even if you want to.
It causes other issues.
Exactly.
You know, I think also a lot of people are under the impression and like, well, nobody knows me more than me. Somebody else can't tell me this. But
right.
And so they start self-medicating, like you said, as well, thinking, oh, well, I know what this does to me. And I think it starts a downward spiral. And honestly, when it comes to mental issues, sometimes it takes somebody else telling you something. Or in a way that, you know, kind of resonates with you to want to make a change.
And I think that's something that I go back to that mental health first aid course, because one of the things that is in that course is that starting those conversations, it gives a little bit of information about all the different mental health issues there are, but it also then provides tools for people to start those conversations. Because it's very hard to say, you know, sometimes people end up saying things like, I think you have a drinking problem. I think you need to stop doing this. And mental health first aid teaches you to say things like, I've noticed X, Y, and Z is occurring. I am concerned about you. Mm-hmm. I have
less accusatory.
Exactly. So you start kind of framing things differently so that you can have a conversation that doesn't get into defensive mode as quickly, so that you can have the opportunity to have that conversation with people and be productive. So mental health first aid, again, helps with that as well. And you never know when you're going to have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It also helps you assess for people maybe in a suicide stage, where a lot of people, it's hard to talk about suicide. And I mean, honestly, think about it. How hard would it be for you to look across the table at somebody and say, Chris, I'm really concerned about you. Are you thinking about suicide?
Well, I can tell you from experience that, again, suicidal tendencies aren't something you want to meet head on in the crisis stage. Like you
right.
said, I've had two friends that I've had to talk down
mm-hmm.
before.
Mm-hmm.
And it could have all been avoided had I taken the time to talk to them before they were in that stage in the first place. And I don't know if you've ever been in a room with somebody who's acting very mentally unstable and very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in a room with somebody like that who has a knife in their hand ready to take their own life, it gets pretty scary.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, at one point he stood up.
Mm-hmm.
And he got irate, and I was like, okay, well, I think maybe he's going to take me with him. And,
right, right.
And it just, trust me, from experience, I can tell you, it's better and less awkward to have the conversations necessary to keep them from getting to that point, to maybe help get them the help they need, than it is to be trying to talk them down.
Right. Yeah, get it before you get to crisis. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think something that we've overlooked a little bit, and we haven't overlooked it. We know it's there. It's just one major issue for people getting help is machismo, is the culture, the masculine culture that you don't need help. You can take care of everything yourself,
right.
Kind of like what you were saying. And we have a really big Hispanic population, and I have tons of Hispanic clients who are like, well, my husband will never come in. And they mentioned that word machismo.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just them, though. It is every population that I deal with, every cultural, every background. Men have a really big problem of admitting they have a problem or even admitting that they need help. So
absolutely.
I don't know how we're going to work on that issue. But
well, I was going to ask you, Lewis, we were talking about disarming, you know, saying things that help disarm the situation, not the person, but the situation. What are some things that you can, you know, use to start these conversations off with without causing somebody to get defensive? I mean, this is what you do all day, every day. Sometimes you have to tell people things that may not go over very well. So what are some of the tactics you use?
I use analogies a lot. and then once they see, oh, yeah, that makes sense, I'm like, does that sound familiar to you? Well, look at your situation. I use analogies a lot. Non-accusatory, non-aggressive words. Mm-hmm. Especially when you're dealing with a couple that wants to kill each other, and then if you try to get in the middle, they want to kill you.
Right.
You have to use a lot of analogies. So,
well,
metaphors. And
yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
We appreciate you being here, Elaine. We're actually already at the end of our time.
It went quickly.
It does go quick.
Mm-hmm. Before we go, please tell us how we can get a hold of the Behavioral Health Leadership Team. Should anybody need your advice? Should anybody need your services?
Sure. So the one important thing to remember is the Behavioral Health Leadership Team is a staff of me, myself, and I.
Oh.
And so, with that in mind...
Team Elaine.
The turn time on responses...
It's going to take some time.
Yes, exactly. So if you needed to talk to somebody about resources in a very timely fashion of getting you resources that you need for you or your family or friends, I would call 68 Nurse Program. And they are great, by the way. They are fantastic. I actually did mental health first training for all of them, and they are phenomenal. Phenomenal people. I can't say enough good about them. So I would definitely give them a holler. If you wanted to do something like donate or volunteer your time, you can always contact me through the website. And again, that's MidlandBHI.org.
MidlandBHI.org.
Behavioral Health Initiative.
Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for Eyes on Psych this week. Please join us again next week, where we'll talk about more issues, more solution techniques, and more services available to you in your community. Until then, hang in there. You're stronger than you realize.
This program was a production of the Recording Library of West Texas and is also available at recordinglibrary.org.